This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
It's great to have as our guest today Professor Joseph Salerno. Dr. Salerno is professor of economics at Pace University in New York. He's head of the graduate program there. He's a senior fellow at the Mises Institute. He's editor of the Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics, author of many important papers, and a leading monetary theorist. And Joe, I want to ask you today about this economic crisis that the Federal Reserve has created. First of all, tell us, how did they do it? What has happened to us, and how did it come about?
Well, you know, Lou, it came about, really, there's an ideological component and an economic component. And the ideology began to change in the late 80s with Greenspan, who made the claim that we couldn't count the amount of money in the economy, and that even if we could, it didn't matter. That is, that you know, the money supply itself wasn't the important variable. The Fed should concentrate on the interest rate. So at that point, we began, after the Mexican crisis in the 1990s, to get a huge increase in the money supply that predictably led to a crisis. We had the dot-com bubble, the run-up in stock prices and so on, and then the bursting of the bubble in 2001. And then, in order to get us out of that, there was another more or less ideological or intellectual change in the way the Fed approached things. And in 2002 or so, they tried to scare us into believing that we were on the verge of deflation. There were a number, in fact, Bernanke, who was on the Board of Governors at the time, came out with a famous speech in New York where he said that, don't worry, we can, we have all the tools necessary to prevent us from slipping into a deflation. Well, no one had even been thinking of deflation at that point, and so this really actually scared the markets. And then at that point, they began to inflate once again to get us out of this 2000-2001 recession, and we got the housing bubble. So it was two huge bursts of Fed monetary expansion that set us up for this current financial crisis.
Well, Joe, here we are in the crisis, and it seems like Bernanke and Paulson have read the playbook of Herbert Hoover and seem to be trying to redo his policies. But I must say, what I find startling is the unbelievable amounts of quote-unquote liquidity that they're injecting into the banks, into money market funds, into seemingly any financial institution that needs to be bailed out.
They really don't know what they're doing from day to day. It's all patchwork. It's all sticking their fingers in the dike at various points. There is no overall plan, and they're frankly very, very afraid of what can happen, and they don't know what will happen. One of the things that I find interesting is that everyone with stocks and exposure to stocks was permitted to lose money as the stock market went down, but suddenly now no one who has any commercial paper is allowed to lose money. They have a fund that of $600 billion that they're going to be injecting through J.P. Morgan into money market funds in order to buy their commercial paper, so that the money market funds can pay off at the full $1. Well, no one ever promised investors that the shares of money market funds would always be redeemed at $1. What's the problem with having them redeem them at 95 cents or 97 cents or 90 cents? Why shouldn't they share in the losses of all this? Well, one of the reasons is that they're very fearful that this is going to interfere with the daily financing of businesses. But, I think this whole idea goes back to this the so-called frozen credit markets. Credit markets are supposed to freeze up during a recession. There's an important function for that, and that is that suddenly now things have gone wrong. Resources have been misallocated. There's a lot of distortions. No one knows which investments are good investments, which investments are not good investments. So the fact that credit dries up, and it doesn't actually dry up, Lou. There's been an increase, actually, in bank credit extended, in bank loans, and so on. It's increasing at a much slower rate than it was before. But again, to get back to what the function is that the market pauses for a while. It allows the bad investments to be liquidated. There's nothing wrong with lending slowing down and letting some certain borrowers go bankrupt. There's still a lot of real assets in the economy. The capital structure, if the market is permitted to work and prices are permitted to change, will be readjusted to consumer demand. And the faster the Fed gets out of the way, and the less regulation we have, the more quickly this adjustment will take place.
But instead of getting out of the way, they seem to be getting into the way in a way that seems to me to be unprecedented, even by New Deal standards.
Yes. I mean, this whole idea that the Fed has the tools to prevent a deflation means that we are open to any sort of monetary injection. They found every possible way to inject money into the economy. What's interesting, though, is that if you look at the money supply figures, they're not increasing that much, if at all, depending on which Fed number you look at. And one of the reasons for that is that they're pulling money out of the economy. They're neutralizing some of these injections. That is, they're making the injections at very specific points, and then at the same time, they're taking money out of the economy in general. But that's not going to last long. We will see an inflation. We will see prices going up. And what we're going to see, I think, is really Japan number two. I mean, you know, Japan is still not out of the crisis that started in 1989. They did everything that Paul Krugman and other mainstream economists told them in the 1990s, doubling their debt, injecting money, and instead of allowing their market to adjust, they tried these monetary and fiscal policies, which have not worked, and so they're stagnating. And that is what I fear is going to happen to the U.S. economy.
But, Joe, isn't the Japanese economy sounder than the U.S.? I mean, I think just of the fact about their savings rate. I mean, the Japanese people are an extremely frugal people. Americans are spendthrifts by comparison. I mean, might we not be lucky in one sense to get a Japanese economy?
No, in some sense, the Japanese recession never really got to the point where it was a deep recession. It was what we might call a growth recession. In other words, their rate of growth slowed down because, as you said, they are such high savers that there was still investment, even during this prolonged period of a sort of stagnation. In the U.S., it will be very different, that type of stagnation. It will result in an actual possible fall in our rate of output, okay, so that our living standards will fall. And this is... that's not to say that the Japanese are doing the right things. If their government got out of the way and they stopped forcing banks to keep some of these companies alive, what would happen is that they would have a higher rate of growth than they have now. Okay, but for the U.S., we need the Fed and all these other agencies and regulations out of the way just to allow us to maintain our standard of living.
I remember so well back during the evil Reagan administration when James Baker went to Japan in order to pressure them to undo a very damaging public policy, according to the U.S., which was that their postal savings accounts, and they had, as America did in earlier days in many, many European countries in older days, had a vast postal savings system, and there was no tax on the interest rates, on the interest paid in the postal savings. And so Baker said, Japan is saving too much, which is hurting them and hurting the U.S. and hurting the world. So they actually pressured the Japanese to change the law to tax the savings in the so-called gyro accounts and the postal savings accounts. But it didn't work. I mean, the Japanese still kept saving, just as the Chinese people do as well, despite the U.S. wanting them to spend every dime. And, of course, also as part of the U.S. recommended and Krugman recommended recovery plans for Japan, also engaging in vast public works projects, a la the New Deal. And, of course, that didn't work either.
You know, that's a very good point, Lou, because what we're hearing now is that, just as sort of a matter of course, everyone is saying, including Bernanke, that we got into all these problems because of the glut of world saving. That is, that there was too much saving. A lot of it came into the U.S. economy, drove asset prices up, and this is the problem. Well, the problem with that explanation is precisely that in order for prices to be driven up in terms of dollars, there has to be more dollars around. If there was simply more saving, that would have made the dollar much stronger, and Americans would have cut back on consumption, and there would have been a shift towards legitimate investment from the rest of the world. But the problem was that we had a tremendous increase in the money supply. The money supply, if you look at M2 or MZM, the two Fed measures, from 2000 to 2001 or so, went up by over $2 to $3 trillion, went up by over 50%, and this is what drove the boom in housing prices.
Joe, do we face what I guess is the worst of all possible worlds in economic terms, an inflationary depression?
Yeah, I am afraid of that, because what will happen is that as the money supply increases, we're going to get pressure eventually on consumer prices to rise. And we saw an uptick in the summer in the rate of increase of producer and consumer prices. But at the same time, the government is preventing the adjustment, the real adjustments that need to take place. Liquidity can't paper over the fact that the economy is out of sorts, that the wrong things are being produced, and that there has to be a shift in investments. So the depression is going to come and take hold in the real economy while all this liquidity is being injected and eventually will affect consumer goods prices.
Joe, if people who are not professional economists but are serious people want to understand more about what the heck is going on, why it's happened, what's ahead, and so forth, what should they read?
Well, I think one or two books. One is Murray Rothbard's America's Great Depression. Certainly the beginning of the first few chapters on, he outlines the theory in a very comprehensible way for the layperson. And there's also a little booklet of essays that includes essays by Rothbard and Mises and Hayek on the Austrian theory of the trade cycle. So I would recommend those two, just as a theoretical background for the layperson.
Joe, thanks so much for coming on today and helping explain what these cretins are doing to us.
My pleasure, Lou.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show, produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@LouRockwell.com. And thanks for listening.